There was lots of good stuff at the show.
They had a book that they were selling that was just sitting out on a table, and they flipped through, and there were naked titties in the book.
Naked titties.
Naked Fujiko titties. Woo!
And then, like, you walk one booth over, and there's Anpanman and little girls getting their pictures taken with Anpanman.
Only in Japan.
You just heard the song Signalized by the artist Waka, Fudi, and Sunao from the anime Aikatsu. Welcome everyone to the 171st session of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, broadcasting live from Japan every Sunday evening or Monday morning for us, where our sole mission is to... What is our sole mission?
I believe it's to make your anime addiction worse, Graham.
Yes, I believe that's it, yes.
I've heard a rumor that that's what it was.
Really? Through the grapevine?
Through the grapevine, indeed.
Well, with me today, of course, as you've heard, is my beautiful co-host, Chiaki. Say hi, Chiaki.
You think I'm pretty?
I do.
You're
all pride.
I like
Unfortunately, Mitsugi couldn't be with us today, and it is definitely not because I killed him and took over his podcast. Definitely not that reason.
Definitely not that reason.
If you're wondering. So how was your weekend?
My weekend was amazing because I did something awesome and anime-related in Tokyo.
Me too.
What did you do?
Wait, weren't you there?
I think I was.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I was just completely high on drugs the whole time that I don't remember it very well.
I was high on life.
What about Jesus? Were you high on Jesus?
That doesn't sound right, Graham.
I actually bought this sweet mug while I was there, this Gundam, this Zaku mug.
Hold it higher.
For the live chat, you can see my sweet new Zaku mug.
Yay, Zaku.
But, yeah, so today we've got a really good show. We're going to talk about the Tokyo International Anime Fair that we went to.
Yes.
A legit, for reals, Japanese anime convention, which is awesome. And then we're going to get into a couple of reviews, and it'll be a good show, and hopefully we can get through this.
It'll be good. It'll be good, Cram.
But we miss you, Mitsugi. We miss you.
We do. And he'll hear that when he's editing this later.
I hope he enjoys that message to Mits. All right.
He knows our hearts will go on with him.
Thank you, Celine Dion. Well, it looks like we managed to scrounge up 6 new forum members today. And those forum members would be Podcast? Is that right? Someone's name is Podcast?
Apparently. Wow. I don't know. I guess I'll let it fly, but no relation.
Podcast, Anime Doom, The Gray Ghost, Sasu 010, Grin of Death, and Miss Rasphere Heaven. Was that right? Rasphere Heaven.
Raspberry, maybe it's like raspberry.
Raspberry heaven.
Raspberry heaven.
Okay.
Like a weird raspberry.
That's going to be my username of the week because it gave me so much trouble.
My name of the week will be the Gray Ghost.
Oh, nice.
The Gray Ghost. I like that one.
This week's trivia answer was Rafal Edia from Legend of the Legendary Heroes. That sounds like a really legendary show, doesn't it?
It's epic.
And the correct answers submitted were from Typhoon Shivam 4 Under a Bridge Eating BG. We decided Billy Goats?
It's Billy Goats.
It's Billy Goats.
That is what he himself has informed us.
Okay.
And I think it's a he. That goes back to that whole, I'm really not technically sure with a lot of forum members' genders, and I assume they're men. Sorry if
he or she. We do need a gender-neutral pronoun. We really do. We really do. And also Cool Manio all submitted correct answers. But this month's winner is...
Or week's winner.
Is it week? Okay, week. This week's winner. See, I don't even know what I'm doing. This this week's winner is...
How did we let you do this?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not qualified. My resume is really weak. But this week's winner is Typhoon. Congratulations, Typhoon. The point value for this round was 40 points. Is that right?
40 points.
40 points. Congrats again. So we're going to jump into the overflowing contents of an almighty anime mailbag, or AAA mailbag.
Dun, dun, dun.
Remember, you can submit your own question or comment through our website at aaapodcast.com by clicking on the tab labeled mailbag.
And we get through all of the mailbags. Mm-hmm. I don't let Mitsugi delete any, sometimes he's going through them and going,
he wants to.
This is pointless. I'm not answering.
Why are we
question.
Doing this? I hate everything.
See,
he enjoys that too.
We'll spit out enough hate for Mitsugi to make up for the fact that he's not here today.
I hate everything.
That's what I sound like. Man, we're hating on him. I'm sorry. I love you, Mitsugi, wherever you are.
But you know, he has the power of editing, so he'll edit us together and make us say awful, awful things.
Terrible, like bomb threats and whatnot to the police. Yeah, it's awesome. So
you just gave him that sound clip.
I know.
You gave him the soundbite of you saying that.
Be merciful. Please be merciful, Mitsugi. Our first question comes from Cool Manio. Do you want to read this one?
Sure. Cool Manio writes, "Hello, esteemed host."
Wow.
Oh.
Esteemed.
Oh, yeah.
Never been esteemed.
"I was wondering, what anime would you consider your comfort anime? What anime would you watch if you are feeling down in the dumps, and by watching this anime, you feel better? For me, it's Aria the Animation."
Aria?
Aria.
Do I know that? That sounds familiar.
It sounds really familiar to me, too.
Sounds like comfort food. It's very soft. Soft sounding. I don't know. Do you have one?
Comfort anime. Probably most recently, Kimi ni Todoke or Chihayafuru for me would get added to that list because they're just sweet and light. I actually think I'd put Mawaru Penguin Drum on there too.
Oh, really?
Because there's definitely an element of like sweet, fantasiful, that's a word I'm using now, ness to Mawaru. As far as older anime that I would use for, comfort food, maybe from like, you know, maybe Fushigi Yugi, but Miyaka really annoys me.
Yeah.
And
it's not so comfortable.
No, it really isn't.
That show does some weird stuff.
That show does.
Really, really weird stuff that I don't.
That show probably gets classified under the "I watched that when I was way too young to watch
show." Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Back in the heyday where we're all just watching everything we can get our hands on.
Yep.
Managed to make its way in there somehow. For me, it would probably have to be a nostalgia pick. So the easy answer is like Dragon Ball Z or something.
Yeah.
But I would say probably more from more recent stuff. Something really light, funniest, like maybe Lucky Star. Actually,
okay.
It's kind of easy to watch. So yeah.
What might get added onto there, depending on how it goes, is the Sailor Moon reboot.
Oh yeah.
Because that will definitely have the nostalgia factor combined with new glossy, pretty, beautiful.
Little disappointed we didn't see anything from
the Tokyo
Anime Fair.
But don't spoil it, Graham.
No spoilers. Okay. The next question comes from Yotaru Vegeta. He asks, "Have you all encountered condom ice cream on your shopping trips yet?" Yes.
Yes? Yeah. I haven't.
Yes, I have. Actually, it was the first ice cream. I think it was the first like just snack treat I had when I moved here.
Really?
Yes. My wife found it at the grocery store, and she said, this thing is weird, and we're going to eat it together.
W- Did you use the condom? No, just kidding.
Well, the interesting thing is that like it looks like it's in a condom, right? But they actually call it oppai ice, which is oppai
like
is
boob.
Yes, it looks like a breast. So it's kind of mistaken for a condom because the thing has a little looks like a reservoir tip.
I've had oppai pudding.
Is that in like the little balloon?
Yeah,
thing?
It's yeah. in like the little
yeah,
balloon
same thing,
and
same
it
thing.
Has the nipple.
Yep. So it's basically the same thing. It looks like it has a little reservoir tip. So what he's referring to as the condom is actually they call a oppai ice because it looks like a breast. But yeah,
wow.
I have had that. It's quite delicious, although a little weird.
Is it just ice cream? Like, is it normal ice cream or,
yeah,
or
like
are
soft
there...
serve?
Okay,
just soft serve, and it's pretty good.
I have not encountered that yet, but. Now that I know what to look for.
He sent us a link actually with his question, and I've seen this video. I actually know one of the girls in the video from my YouTubing days. She is a J blogger, like I once was.
Whoa, and then we corrupted you.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
All right.
Coming up next, we will be discussing our trip to the Tokyo International Anime Fair, but first we're gonna take a quick anime news break. So stay with us.
What other reviews are we doing, Cram?
We will be doing Wolf Children, the new film by Mamoru Hosoda, and I believe you will be doing a review of Excel World?
Excel World, indeed.
Okay, well, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Of sock and anime fans out there, this is Chiaki and this is your anime news break. First up, in some news that I know personally will make Mitsugi quite happy, the anime division of the retailer HMV has recently reported that production on a third film in the Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha anime franchise has been green lit. And I can confirm this bit of news because I saw it myself on a poster on a subway. It was made at the end of Lyrical Party V, or 5. I'm not sure if they're using Roman numerals here. Marking the release of the second film, Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha the Movie Second A's on Japanese Blu-ray disc and DVD. Now, in some news that makes me very excited, director Kuniko Ikuhara went to a current exhibit of Revolutionary Girl Utena art that's taking place in Tokyo right now. To announce some, well, interesting news. He was screening some brief footage from his new anime work tentatively titled Yuri Kuma Arashi, or literally, Yuri Bear Storm. The footage featured a bear that transformed into a girl. Now, Ikuhara didn't state how the project will be released. The last project he worked on was Moara Penguin Drum, and as you know, I liked it very much. So, I'm very interested to see what is coming next from this director. And in some new anime news, the official website for the anime adaptation of Kohei Asano's Tokyo Ravens light novel series has announced that the project will air on television. It's a school supernatural fantasy that centers around a boy from the branch of the Chichimako family, of Onmyodo occult practitioner. His name is Harutora. He lacks the ability to see spirit energy, so he's now an ordinary high school student. Oh no. Natsume is a girl who is Haruota's childhood friend and is the next head of the family. She reunites with him and, well, changes his future. Though, if that sounds like something you're interested in, it's been greenlit and is coming to television. And finally, in some game anime overlap news, Capcom has been making a series of announcements for its Mega Man franchise at PAX East World of Capcom panel, which celebrated Mega Man's 25th anniversary. Capcom hinted at a new project to answer the call of fans, but stated they are still working behind the scenes before they can announce anything officially. They made some other announcements regarding the sale of Mega Man 4, an NES game on the 3DS Virtual Console, and some other things. But will this project be a new game or maybe quite possibly a new anime. Who knows? But for all the Mega Man fans out there, I'm sure it sounds like music to their ears. This is Chiaki, and this was your Anime News Break. Don't go anywhere. I cry when you do. Just kidding. We'll be back to the show soon.
Hey guys, I am Sean Ryan, also known as the Grey Ghost.
And I am Kevin Grey, also known as The Business and the LLC.
And we are Method to Madness, a weekly podcast that cusses and discusses anime and video games.
Yes.
And other otaku subjects.
That is what we are here for. We are here to rip them up and sometimes build them up. The shows that we love, the shows that we hate, the shows that we watch so that you wouldn't have to.
Go to thegreyghost.net or go check us out on iTunes.
With whiskey. This is so stupid, but awesome.
That's why this is going to be great.
Oh, this is...
Hi, I'm J. Michael Tatum. I play Sebastian in Black Butler, and I'm a total anime.
Welcome back to the 171st session of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. I'm Cram.
I'm Chiaki.
And we're going to be getting into our main topic for today's episode. So, this weekend, we went to a, like I said before, legit for reals Japanese anime convention.
Yes.
The Tokyo International Anime Fair, or the Tokyo Kokusai Anime Fair, to be totally, like, accurate.
I like your total accuracy, Cram.
Thank you. I've been working on it. So we've got a couple of points we want to discuss. We're going to get into, of course, what we saw, what was being exhibited, the kind of shows and movies and OVAs and DVD releases and all that kind of stuff that have been previewed for this upcoming year. And then a little bit from next year, too, from 2014. So, and then, of course, we're going to talk about a really kind of, I think, is important to discuss the differences between Japanese anime conventions and Western anime conventions.
And, you know, I think that's a really good starting place because I feel like a lot of people, it'll give good context to this discussion because, of course, a lot of listeners are not in Japan.
Yes.
Which is...
That is true.
Yes, it is. It is the truth. And because of that, I know, of course, a lot of listeners are in North America, and that's where we were located ourselves until we moved over here. And so there's kind of a conception on what an anime convention is from the States, especially for us coming from a state like Florida, where, you know, it was practically the joke of the anime community for a long time that Florida had, you know, a different convention for every month. And it was almost true.
Wow. That's crazy. And back in the day, I would have loved something like that. Because waiting all year just to go to my local anime convention was just excruciating. The wait was terrible. I wanted it to happen every month, so.
Yeah. But at the same time, because we have a convention every month, three-fourths of them are not good. And
of course.
Yeah. Anyways, but because there's a convention every month, it kind of gives this impression that anime conventions are really easy to start up. And we had an episode a while back where we talked with Tom Kroom, the founder of Wasabi Anime, and Tom talked about a lot of kind of the behind the scenes of starting an anime convention because he started the Florida Anime Experience and has worked on a number of conventions like Anime Expo and stuff like that. He's been out there helping
them.
The
big time stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, he definitely knows the behind the scenes. This is the actual what it takes to run a good convention. But let's face it, all things considered, you know, all you have to do is run out some kind of hotel space and put up a website and you can have a convention. And anime conventions over here are definitely not only much more few and far between, but they're more professional, which I think lends itself to the few and far between.
Oh, yeah. And you can definitely see that in I think if you were following our Twitter feed this weekend and you saw like kind of the nature of the show and the type of booths that were set up, like there were booths, like it looked like E3 or one of the really professional kind of video game or other kind of media conventions, where the purpose is to showcase the work that's being done for the year, you know, what's coming out, what's being worked on. And it's not just to get together with your friends and play Marco Polo in the hallway.
Yes. And I think that's definitely something that was, well, to be honest, a little refreshing.
Yeah.
though I will admit that personally, I do like, at least for larger conventions that we go to, like Otakon and whatnot, I do like a lot of the more professional fan panels. So that would have been nice. The other thing that they don't do here in Japan at conventions that is incredibly popular in America, and I shouldn't say don't do, but do different, is cosplay.
Mm-hmm.
In America, many people, myself included half the time, will put on their cosplay in the hotel room and drive or walk over to the convention and walk around all day in the cosplay, and everyone stops and takes pictures and whatnot. Here in Japan, that is not how it's done. In fact, we saw a Westerner or two doing that, and it was kind of embarrassing.
Awkward, really awkward.
Yeah, it's really, really uncomfortable.
They say if you visit, I mean, I think it's still up, obviously, so you could visit the Tokyo Anime Fair website, and under the section with cosplay, it says that this was actually the first year that they had a cosplay section.
Yeah.
At the anime fair. And the fair has been going on for years now. So, I mean, you can really see how, I mean, just with that alone, it's been very industry oriented and not for the fans.
Yeah.
Like, really at all. but on the website, it also says that don't walk in your costume. Don't walk in your makeup. Don't walk in your wig. There's a dressing area. And the reason it says is that there are people at the convention that are not interested in cosplay.
Yeah.
So walking around in your makeup or your wig or your full costume might disturb them, which is so interesting to me because in the States, these things happen in a hotel, and I'm always concerned about the people that come to the hotel just on the wrong weekend and have no idea what's going on, and people walking around with their, you know, various body parts hanging out
which is
poorly designed costumes.
Hilarious in Orlando because you have all those families who are, let's have a magical weekend at Disney. And then it's like, oh my God.
Wrong kind of magical, right?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, at Japanese anime conventions or, you know, gatherings or whatever you want to officially call this type of thing, they have a cosplay area with specifically designed restrooms or locker rooms that are the cosplay, you know, preparation area.
Yep.
And people come with their suitcases and whatnot, and they go into the restroom, locker room, they change out, and then they have a place that, you know, they can basically almost like coat check for their suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
And they can leave their suitcase there, or they can bring it with them if they really so desire. And then it's like a pen. It's like a cosplay pen.
Yep.
For lack of a very fancy
walled
word.
Off. You have to go into it to see any of the cosplay.
Yes. You know. And I mean, I honestly kind of like it that way because I can't say how annoying it is when you're at a convention and someone is carrying a giant prop.
Yep.
That's whacking you in the face every time they turn, or, you know, someone freaks out and is like, oh my God, I want to take your picture. And then the entire flow of traffic in the hallway stops. So, you know, I actually kind of like it that way.
It was really nice. And they've done the same thing for years at Komike.
Yeah.
So the outdoor area is the cosplay area. If you're in cosplay, you can't leave that area. Like
unless
you're going to change.
Yeah. No, you must change in the outdoor area.
Exactly. It's a special kind of cosplay. So you go out there, you pick your spot, you camp, and people come and they take your picture.
Yeah.
And that's it. And you stay there for as long as you want to.
And the other thing, not to change this into a cosplay discussion, but just as someone who has cosplay that I really like, is everyone asks to take your picture. Everyone asks before taking a picture.
Mm.
even if you're clearly posing for like three other cameras, people who walk up will do like the hold up their camera and do like the I'm going to take a picture of you now.
Right.
And as some again, as someone who's cosplay, I really like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's very Japanese.
I really kind of like that. Okay, give me 1 second to churn, give you the best angle and whatnot. The other thing that is really big at American anime conventions is the dealer's room.
Yes.
And, you know, the dealer's room is massive. In fact, for a lot of conventions, that's half the con.
Mm-hmm.
And that's half the reason people go. People go to see a panel, sit in the viewing room or something for an hour or two, and then buy their merch for the year at a dealer's room. But there wasn't any kind of dealer's room.
No, some booths had, like, there were a couple of little shops. Like, there was one shop that had, like, anime-related snacks, like little tins of cookies and chocolates and things that had, like, Madoka or Dragon Ball, you know, plastered on them. The one that we spent the most time at was the Cell shop.
Yeah.
Like, they had a place that just, like, 50% off all original Cells, and you go through and there's just people crowded around these bins flipping through, like, Hajime no Ippo and, you know,
yeah, various. Mitsugi bought two of those.
Yeah. Yeah. So we spent some time there. But, I mean, just in general, there isn't a dealer's room. Like, it's just you can buy some stuff. And it's not as good. Like I think the dealer's room in the States or in the West, I prefer to how they deal with things here.
Yeah.
But again, it's more fan oriented in the West. Like it feels
that way. You know, I'd almost even rather though Japan take an approach like cosplay, because I mean, that's what we did in the West. It's like, you want to buy something, you go here.
Yeah. Go here. Line up because it's going to be crowded.
And, Everything that you can buy is all in this one place. There's nothing else where here. I kind of felt like things were spread out. I feel like there were a number of booths that had things to sell that I was like, Oh, you're selling something. Okay.
But to be fair, like for the United States, there isn't really a retail outlet for anime-related goods. And in Japan, there are multiple ones. You know, you've got Mandarake and Animate and places
and
like
7-Eleven.
That. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we're living in a dealer's room, so to be fair.
Oh, yeah. But it was definitely a great experience. As a longtime anime fan, it was definitely like a... I think, as you said earlier, it's like, this is E3 event. It was kind of that feeling where, you know, everyone who's anyone in the industry had a booth, had things at their booth, was making announcements on the big stage. Like, it was definitely this is a place where things were being announced.
Right.
Which, speaking of announcements...
let's get into what we saw.
One that I am excited to say is the Makoto Shinkai.
Oh yeah, well I guess, of course.
I'll jump right into that. Comics Wave, I think is the studio name.
Mm.
They were screening a new Shinkai film, which
with a trailer at least. Did they do the whole film?
No, it was just a trailer.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, did we miss that?
If we missed that, I would be in tears. They were screening a Shinkai film and I missed it. But
the title of the film is Koto no Ha no Niwa.
Mm.
So the translation roughly is the garden of the leaf of the spoken word or something like that. That's my own translation, but not a very good one.
I like your translation.
Yeah.
I do.
But yeah, it's a very, very Japanese title.
Yeah. And I think there's something to do with feet in this film. I feel like
foot fetish?
I don't know if it's foot fetish.
Is this a Tarantino film?
I don't know. But I definitely when watching the trailer, there was an emphasis on feet.
Okay.
Feet and rain. Those are my two themes for this film.
Interesting. I mean, of course, the thing that stands out the most about the trailer is it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy beautiful.
It was definitely one of those, saw it, sat down, and the booth was really well done. And there's a picture on Twitter, by the way. There's pictures of almost everything we're talking about on Twitter.
Yes.
So don't forget to check out twitter.com/AAPodcast.
Neggy Mudkip in the chat said that he was probably the only person who saw the pics on Twitter and replied to the pics, and we appreciate that.
We
Neggy
do.
Mudkip. Thank
we
you.
We do. And follow us on Twitter because it makes us feel less sad. And if you don't have a Twitter account, make one. Just follow us because it makes us feel less sad. Anyways, what I was saying, though, is that I sat down and I didn't know for sure it was Shinkai because there was that moment that, I mean, it wasn't like his name was plastered somewhere, but I saw the studio and I went, that's the studio Shinkai works with. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think it's his studio?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's his.
Probably. I'm not really sure.
I'm not 100% sure, but I feel like it is. Anyways, but I it was really nice, and there were benches, and I sat down, and I watched the trailer, and I was like, is this Shinkai? And Mitsugi comes over and sits down, and he's watching too. And Mitsugi's like, this has to be Shinkai. No other director uses a lens flare like that. So that's how we decided it was Shinkai.
It's kind of an interesting design choice that I saw just from the trailer that's different from his other films, in that he's kind of done away with black lines around characters. And
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's new. And it's really, really interesting to see how, like, the colors blend with the backgrounds and whatnot without even just a hint of a black line. Because even in most everything, there's just a hint of a black line around characters to separate them from the background. But in this, there is no black line, and I think it gives it a really kind of interesting look.
I'm holding up the poster, and it kind of looks like a green blur.
I think that's new, though.
But
yeah.
Yeah, it's... It looks beautiful. It looks gorgeous. And I see feet. I see feet. It's feet and rain. Those are the themes. I'm calling it now.
Co-written by Quentin Tarantino, who has a thing for feet. One thing I was a little bit disappointed about at this year's convention was that the section called Creators World, which is all like independently produced stuff, people trying to, you know, get crowdsource funding for their various projects and whatnot, it was much less prominent. Last year, they had kind of walled off a section where you just walk through and make this U-turn, and it's all of the independently produced stuff, so you've got lots of really interesting stuff crowded into one area. But in this year, their booths just looked like any other, like, small studio's booth, and it was hard to distinguish, like, what was part of the Creators World or what was, like, you know, an actual studio that's you know, funded, I don't know, corporately, if you will.
Yeah.
But I was a little bit disappointed in that because last year that was one of my favorite things, was the Creators World stuff. I saw probably the most interesting things at the show there. But, yeah, that maybe next year they'll bring it back like they did last year. I think the Sunrise Bandai Visual booth, to me, was probably the most concentrated awesomeness.
Yes.
There was just too much awesome in that one area.
They had some hot booth girls.
Yes, they did. They were promoting the sixth episode of Gundam Unicorn.
Yes, I'm holding up a Gundam poster.
Looks really good. Is that Unicorn?
Yes. UC.
Oh, that's
I think
right.
That means Unicorn.
Yes, it does.
So... And yes, they were sixth installment. They were promoting, Snap, Crackle, and Pop.
Yamato. They were promoting Yamato 2199, yes, with a really hot booth babe.
A new Code Geass.
That's right, new movie. I can't even remember the subtitle.
That's what I was trying
something
to remember.
It's a sequel to some other Code Geass something.
Either way, it's Code Geass and it's Sunrise and it's fancy and beautiful.
Valvrave Liberator, which is a new mech show by Sunrise that's not Gundam. Can you believe it?
What?
A mech show by Sunrise that's not Gundam. I'm so excited.
I think Sunrise Bandai maybe had one of the biggest booths in the sense of they really were promoting their anime.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like a lot of the booths were really cool. Like, for example, Gainax.
Yeah.
Studio Gainax did something that was so cool, and I wish we could have taken pictures, but it said no pictures, and sometimes I'm willing to stretch that a bit, but there were security guards, and I didn't want to get kicked out.
I think they were serious.
Yeah, they were pretty serious. But, like, it was a walk-through mini-museum mm-hmm. that they set up. And it was Studio Gainax's process of animation. Mm-hmm. And they had everything from whiteboards with notes scribbled on it of, like, plotting out stories and ideas and things like that. They had original character concept designs from everything from Gurren Lagann to Ava was to there. Was there His and Her Circumstances?
Yeah, oh my god, we saw the script package. Like, there's the script Bible package for His and Her Circumstances, and it had like the handwritten Kade Kano on it, and yes. I freaked out. I'm like, look.
But I mean that was really, really, really cool. And it was awesome to walk through. They had, like, original scripts, of course, all in display cases, but they had original Fooly Cooly flip, like the flip sketches.
Whatever they're called.
the probably, like, key animation, like, mm-hmm. testing. But,
You could do it yourself.
Like, yeah. You know. I mean, some of the stuff you could actually touch, but, I mean, and it's really, really cool, and I'm really, really glad they had that, but it wasn't like Gainax was making an announcement.
Not really. And their announcement section was really, like, sparse. Like,
yeah.
It was just this big red area with, like, six movie posters or six posters for different projects they're working on, some of which they didn't even make. They're just kind of helping distribute,
I think.
Yeah. And that was kind of weird.
So, I mean, I felt like a lot of the booths were kind of like that, where they had a lot of flash to them, yeah. but they weren't really saying much.
Yeah.
Where I feel like Sunrise and Sunrise Band-Aid's booth was like, this is what we are doing, yeah. foremost. Here's all the information.
Sunrise Bandai's booth was, like, concentrated into one thing with, like, a bunch of the various things that they're doing, and then they had a whole nother section just for Tiger and Bunny the Rising.
Yes.
Which, I mean, was huge on its own. They had scale, model, replica, whatever you want to call them, replicas of the motorcycles.
Uh-huh. That were awesome.
Barnaby and Wild Tiger ride.
And they had amazing. Barnaby Wild Tiger cosplay people
tons,
walking around.
Tons of Tiger and Bunny cosplay.
that booth was impressive.
It was insane.
So Sunrise Band-Aid booth was big. Another big one that had a lot of style was Toei's booth.
Oh yeah, of course.
They've
got stuff coming out like today's the 25th as we record this. We're here in Japan, so in 5 days the new Dragon Ball Z movie.
Dun dun dun
dun dun dun dun dun.
But the eternal and I kid you not, there are photos online. The eternal dragon was hovering over their booth. That's they right. suspended him from the ceiling.
He made an appearance.
Their booth was. They had scale PVC models of, like, Goku, Luffy, and
Toriko. They were awesome too.
Yeah. Again, all of these pictures are on Twitter. So if you're like, how do I get pictures of this? Go to Twitter. Their booth was really, really good, and they were definitely pushing that collaboration. That
oh yeah,
doing with
yeah. Just
those
it's
shows.
Like a one off. It'll probably be like 45 minutes or something to air on TV, but
and everyone will probably, like, freak out over it.
3-way collaboration between One Piece, Toriko, and Dragon Ball Z.
you pretty much got anyone who's ever anyone in Shonen.
Do you think there will be fighting in this? You think there'll be some fighting? Will they fight something?
Probably. No, no.
Nah, maybe not.
They'll probably go shopping.
Hardcore crime drama story.
So Toei's booth was very impressive. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really interesting that they premiered maybe for the first time the new Vocaloid Ia.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a complete premiere or not, because I haven't been a good little soldier on keeping up with the new ones, but it's definitely they had the projection system set up,
yeah.
or a mini one that they use for concerts and whatnot,
which is not as impressive as, like, seeing the concert one.
Yeah,
but
well, I mean, of course in the concert they have a lot more control over lighting and stuff like that, and
yeah.
I'm betting the concert ones they use are also a lot higher quality,
yes.
than what they just kind of stuck there that the public theoretically could run up and smash. That was really cool. Video of that is on Twitter. Mm. But Ia was cool.
Tezuka Productions was there. They had basically a retrospective of, you know, the work that they've done over the past 50 years or so, but not really anything new, which was kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
But, you know, what have they done recently? They're working on the new Buddha film. I think that was the last thing they did, and they're working on the sequel.
There's a sequel for it? I was going to say, didn't that already come out?
Yeah, the first one did.
Yeah.
I think they're working on the next one, but nothing from that either. So, yeah, nothing really going on at Tezuka, or at the booth anyway. Ultra Super Pictures booth, which I'm not sure if that's actually the name of the studio, because it looks like they were promoting stuff that has already come out, and then some stuff that's going to come out, like the Lucky Star spinoff and Ayuda Little Witch Academy.
Maybe like a variation of a licensing company or something. Yeah,
the Cyborg 009 movie, which I think came out last year.
I know, and this is a completely different booth, and I forgot which booth, but Mitsugi was excited, saw a new Hanasaku Idoha.
Oh, that's right.
Sequel.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a movie? Is it going to be a movie or an OVA or something?
I don't remember. It's not a series.
But yeah, there was a trailer for that there, too.
And it looked gorgeous. Yeah. It looked very, very good.
Natch.
let's see. There was also a booth... again, I forget the name of the company, but that had a big Lupin section.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave away these really cool booklet things that have a map in them. Like, it's like a map of the area that takes place in the movie or something. But it's like a real map, so you can go to the places mm-hmm. that Lupin goes to.
They were promoting the new Detective Conan movie alongside
yes.
more Lupin, Woman Called Fujiko Mine stuff.
Yes.
So they're working on that still. But yeah, there was lots of good stuff at the show.
They had a book that they were selling that was just sitting out on a table, and they flipped through, and there were naked titties in the book.
Naked titties.
Naked Fujiko titties. Woo!
And then, like, you walk one booth over, and there's Anpanman and little girls yes. getting their pictures taken with Anpanman.
Only in Japan. Japan has this, you know, and I've said this for a long time, but Japan has this really weird relationship with sexuality. Like, it's very, very strange. It's
pretty uncomfortable, actually.
I would agree with that. But
speaking of Anpanman, there was a stage show that
yes.
there were three stages at this. So they don't have like panel rooms. They don't really do panels. They have a big stage, a medium sized stage, and a kid's stage.
Yeah.
And we didn't really see any of the stage stuff because it's all official announcements of stuff that they're, you know, showcasing anyway, like with posters and trailers and whatnot. So,
yeah.
They don't take questions. They don't really do panels. It's really not like it is. And this goes back to how it's different than in the States.
And not to sound like I'm even attempting to insult your Japanese cram, but I feel like if they added any extra information, they would probably say so fast in words
like,
we don't understand.
I missed
like,
it. Sorry.
Sorry. But, we actually, we did go as press, and we got very fancy badges that I'm holding up. They're arm badges.
Yeah, and
so
this thing right here, press badge, made me feel special.
Aw, because that's our goal, is to make you feel special, Graham. Right,
that's why we do this. that was so sad.
okay. Anyways, but some of my favorite stuff from the show. Of course, as I kind of already touched on, I loved Makoto Shinkai's booth.
Yeah.
It was so classy. I mean, that's one thing that I definitely can say. My funny story from the convention was I was taking pictures in the cosplay section, and I saw a Hitalia cosplay, and I had to take a picture of it to joke with Mitsuki. that's what goes through my head. I'm
to
like,
joke with him or to mess with him?
Mess with him. Because that's what goes through my head. Hey, if I take a picture of this, I can tease Mitsuki with it. I walked over to this person who was cosplaying, and I go up and I instinctively speak Japanese.
Yeah.
I instinctively ask in Japanese if it's okay if I take a picture. Which, you know, is of course classified under one of those questions that, of course, it's okay that I take a picture, but you ask anyway. And she responds back to me, yeah, of course, go ahead. And then we both have that moment where we pause and we look at each other and we go, we're both foreign. We both speak English.
Yep.
So I had that fun, awkward moment with myself and another foreigner.
And of course, the only funny moment for me just comes from realizing that if you think people who wear cosplay that have no business wearing the cosplay they're wearing is awkward in the States, try to imagine in a place where everyone looks great in their costume. Like, they work so hard on their costumes. They have the perfect body type and everything.
Yeah.
And then you've got one foreigner walking around wearing something that he or she has no business wearing in public.
Yeah.
It's really awkward.
And I know I mentioned this on a panel I did, and I don't know if I mentioned it ever officially on the show. Maybe I did. Out of 170 episodes, I begin to wonder if there's anything that I've not said.
I know everything about you.
I know, right? But here in Japan, the mentality of the cosplay community is foremost to look like and be the character. It's not to make your costume. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great if you do, but no one cares. No one cares that you made your costume.
Yep.
It's not to make the costume yourself. It's not to cosplay as your favorite character. Of course, if you like the character, you have more knowledge on how the character acts and poses and whatnot. But they don't do it because they're like, oh my god, I love L from Death Note, so I'm gonna cosplay as L. They do it to try to look like the character, and that's the emphasis they put in on it. So if there's a character that they love that they don't have the body type to do, and I won't make a blanket statement and say all, but most Japanese cosplayers won't do that. I mean, they won't cosplay someone who is completely out of their body type.
Right. Absolutely not. So, and that's also a very, very Japanese thing to do and to be like. Some of my favorite things from the show, of course, was the new Shinkai film. Like I said before, Sunrise Bandai's booth was the most concentrated awesomeness. I really liked that. There was some Barnaby and Wild Tiger kids cosplay.
Oh, they were so cute.
That was just amazing. Just amazing. And there's a picture of it on the Twitter. Again, go to the Twitter. Can't say that enough. If you want to see these pictures, go check that stuff
and
out.
And just more pictures from Japan in general that we post throughout our lives.
And the process of animation by Gainax was great.
I
really liked that too. So yeah, that was my favorite stuff from this year.
I think overall, I mean, because this is, I've been to Comic-Con. But Comic-Con is a whole different beast.
Oh my god. Just
there is nothing in the world, period. Not just the world of anime, but in the world that is like Comic-Con. But Comic-Con isn't really even a convention. I feel like it's less of a convention than this is, because it's a cosplay area and a giant doujinshi dealer's room.
Yep.
And that's all it is. You go, you buy your doujinshi, you take pictures of the cosplayer on your way out.
It is 100% fan oriented.
Oh yeah, and it's crazy, but they don't do anything. They just sell doujin.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing.
No events, no stage events or anything like
that. No booths. I mean, let's face it, they don't even have booths. They have like tables with a backdrop if they're really fancy. But I love the scale of it all. There were like anime floats like hanging from the ceiling. There were giant Pikachus and Doraemons and stuff like that. The Eternal Dragon.
Of course.
Just like the mini Vocaloid concert, like everything was so over the top. It was like walking into a anime. It was like walking into an anime fantasy land as a fan. So I think, you know, my favorite thing from the Tokyo International Anime Fair is really just, not to sound corny, but just being there and just having
just
that experience.
The experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to just be able to say, you know, I've been here, I've done this, I know the difference between, you know, what an industry-oriented convention looks like and a fan-oriented convention looks like and what's important about both of them. But it's really interesting, and it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun this year. It was really good.
It was really good. And we got there early enough that it wasn't completely a madhouse.
Yeah.
Mitsugi gave us some notes, and so that way he's gone but not forgotten for this episode. Some of the things that he loved, as I mentioned, the new Hanasaka Iroha, New Code Geass, he was very excited for. Of course, Shinkai's new film, he was also very excited for. He is very excited for the collaboration, because that's just right up his alley. And as, and I quote, booth babes.
Booth babes. Just booth babes. Exclamation point.
Booth babes. Exclamation point. And there are some pictures of the booth babes. Where do you think the pictures are of the booth babes are, Crown?
Are they on MySpace?
No. No.
Friendster?
Friendster?
Oh, no.
Oh yeah, Twitter.
LiveJournal. Oh, okay.
On freaking Twitter.
On Twitter. Go on our Twitter and check out these pictures.
Yeah, seriously, if you haven't got the hint already. But it was definitely a lot of fun to go to the Tokyo International Fair.
So I think that's all I have for this topic. Lots of good stuff there. Do you have anything else for this?
No, I'm pretty much wrapped up myself. It was a great time.
It was awesome. When we come back, we are going to have two reviews for you. Chiaki's going to be reviewing Excel World, and we will be doing a joint review of the new Mamoru Hosoda film, O Kami Kodomo, or Wolf Children. So please stick with us. We'll be right back in a minute.
Tokyo addicts out there, this is Chiaki and this is your Anime News Break. First up, car maker Toyota and the animation company Studio 4 Degrees Celsius have teamed up again to continue their PES Peace Eco Smile initiative at short animation projects. They will be creating a new original anime tentatively titled Chisana Hana no Uta, A Little Flower Song. It's the first 2013 project, and some of the initial concept work looks, well, very interesting. Not much is known about the project yet, but it will center around the mystical final flower spirit. In other news, Wolf Children, Sword Art Online, and Kuroko no Basuke win Tokyo Anime Awards. They've recently been announced and have received honors at the International Anime Fair this past weekend. The top award, Animation of the Year, went to Wolf Children. The best director went to Mamoru Hosoda for Wolf Children. Now, if you're located in North America and are interested in seeing Wolf Children, there are opportunities. It was previously made public that Funimation will be having screenings of the movie Wolf Children at Santa Monica's Aero Theater on April 27th. But additional screenings have been announced, such as at the Dallas International Film Festival at the Angelica 6 Theater on April 8th or the Magnolia 5 Theater on April 13th, as well as in San Diego as part of the Asian Film Festival Spring Showcase on April 20th and 21st at the Digiplex Mission Valley Theater. In other news, a topic that we've, well, never really talked about, but maybe is an opportunity to talk about in the future, is stage adaptations of anime. It's something that is, well, unsurprisingly, incredibly popular here in Japan. And stage play actor Osamu Koroge has recently announced on his blog that a live play of Slam Dunk the Manga is currently under consideration. The production would not be a quote-unquote stage play, per se, since it would use a gymnasium instead of a traditional theater, incredibly fitting for the basketball theme that is Slam Dunk. It's an incredibly classic manga with many followers, so I assume that it would be incredibly popular. And one more North American anime screening announcement. G-Kids has recently announced that due to the success of From Up on Poppy Hill, they will be expanding the list of theaters that will be showing the movie. So if you're located in North America, there are more opportunities for you to see this film in theaters. More screenings were added in New York, as well as Los Angeles, Toronto, and Vancouver, British Columbia. So if you're interested in seeing the film, it's time for you to get out to a theater. This was Chiaki, and this was your Anime News Break. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be back to the show soon.
So you want to hear people talk about Japanese cartoons?
You know, anime.
But you think the other anime podcasters just aren't nerdy enough?
Sounds like you need to join forces with the Anime World Order.
Where each week, three self-proclaimed experts offer you reviews.
Of titles both new and classic, news and commentary.
Rants, convention reports, interviews with fandom.
And some hentai and yaoi for good measure.
So search for anime in the iTunes Music Store.
Or visit our website at animeworldorder.com.
Anime World Order, revealing the truth about anime, one podcast at a time.
Hi, this is Melissa Fawn, and I'm the voice of Radical Edward from Cowboy Bebop. Have you seen Feifei? Feifei, are you anywhere around here? Anyway, I wanted to let you know that I am an anime addict. You hear me? I am addicted to anime!
Welcome back to the 171st session of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. I'm Cram, and with me is Chiaki. Thanks for sticking with us. Before we get into our reviews section, I just want to point out this little... For the live viewers, you can see this figure of Madoka. This is one of mine.
Yes, what's your figure of the week?
My figure of the week is Madoka. And last week, for those of you who tuned in live, I had a really big figure of Master Roshi, like all buffed out. So that's something I'm going to be doing, or try to be doing from here on out for the live viewers, is bringing a new figure from my collection every week so that you can see something new every time you watch. So that's an incentive to get live viewers, and I'm going to be completely shameless about it, so watch the live show. It's a lot of fun, and you can chat with us and talk to us live.
You can ask us questions. You can influence the show.
That's right. You can change history as it's happening. Who doesn't want to do that?
Yes.
You don't even need a DeLorean.
So we've reached the review section of the show, and we are doing two reviews today. And the first one that I will be covering is Excel World. And Excel World is an anime that I started watching. It started airing back in April of 2012. So I think it was like that. This was a show that when it's 24 episodes long, so it actually finished, all things considered, not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely one of those shows that when I first started watching it, I was so excited for it. And then I, as you can tell by the fact that I'm, of course, a little late after the show is finished, it...
Took you a while to...
I got there. So, okay, plot. It's set in 2046, and it's actually set in the same world as Sword Art Online. I believe it's 20 years in the future of the world of Sword Art Online.
I did not know that.
Fun trivia.
They've already got a spinoff?
Oh, yes and no.
What?
I will go into that more in a second.
Okay.
So, plot. The world has been revolutionized by Neuralinkers, which is a technology that almost everyone gets, or pretty much everyone does get, at birth, and it's placed around the wearer's neck. And basically, it links directly to the nervous system, and it connects people as computers pretty much to the world around them via cell phone networks and whatnot. And because of this, online games and online connections have become highly influential to real life, because it's kind of that gap between real life and the digital world is becoming much narrower. So here we meet the protagonist, Harayuki. And Harayuki is a short, fat, and overly bullied, underly confident middle school student. And I, you know, that is not necessarily a meme portrayal. That is what they're going for.
It's quite so, kiddo.
And so, because of this, he will often withdraw into the digital universe. Because that's kind of been his coping mechanism, he is really, really good at online games, because he has this ability to, he's just good at them. that's what he focuses on, and that's what he enjoys. And his abilities are all in the online games. And that's kind of, he's given up on the real world. And so this proficiency in the digital world has drawn the attention of Kuroyuki Hime, or the Black Snow Princess, if I wanted to translate and get fancy. She's a student council member and pretty much the most popular girl in school. She's pretty and comes from a well-off family and, you know, one of those girls who has everything.
Yeah.
But the one thing she doesn't have is a level 10 in this program called Brain Burst. And Brain Burst is a program that's kind of like an off-the-grid program, but it allows people in different areas and prefectures and whatnot to battle each other as burst linkers to gain levels. And the highest level is level 10, which is Kuroyuki Hime's goal. However, to reach level 10, you have to defeat all other level 9 opponents, and losing just one match uninstalls the program permanently. And there's kind of this, like, if you get to level 10, you know, you supposedly get to meet the creator and find out why Brain Burst was created. So Haruyuki agrees on the onset to help Kuroyuki Hime reach this level 10, because, you know, he's so good at the digital world. Her interest in him comes from the fact that he can give her the one thing that she can't get, because everything else in her life is, of course, like, perfect, or at least seems perfect. But as he becomes more involved in the digital world of Brain Burst, black and white, of course, begins to gray, and people aren't what they seem, and new enemies, of course, are just behind every corner. So that's kind of the overarching plot of Excel World. Staff. So, as I mentioned, the story takes place in the same world as Sword Art Online. And this is because both series share the original creator, Reiki Kawahara, who wrote the original stories for both of them. Excel World is based off of a series of light novels, currently at 13 installments, and are still going. Because of this, a second season is, of course, entirely possible, though not absolutely necessary, based on the show's ending. So the show didn't, it kind of had enough of a, there's a potential for to be continued.
Right. But it wrapped everything up nicely enough that.
That if there's
not. It's not possibly right.
Yeah. That if they don't do it for whatever limitations, it's not like people are going to be sitting there going,
Well, that's finished. Good of them. They do that kind of thing with you know, Western TV shows sometimes, yeah. Too. And I really appreciate that, especially when a show is not getting very good ratings, despite the fact that it might be a good show. But
yeah,
that might not be the case with this one.
We'll get there. The director, Masakazu Obara, really only has one major directing credit, which is Mahime. And I can see maybe a little bit of the translatable from that, because Mahime is definitely a monster of the week show. And Excel World isn't entirely like a monster of the week, because but it's a shonen show. There's fighting in almost every episode, especially when we get into Brain Burst and Burst Linkers and whatnot. So it might be a bit of a stretch, since there aren't, thankfully, too many other similarities between the two shows, but yeah. Music was done by Hiroyuki Oshima, and I'm going to give this man props, because this is literally his composer debut. He has no other credits.
Wow.
The only other thing he did was he helped with an ending for Higurashi, which Higurashi has good endings, so that says something, I guess, but he has nothing else. The music was very well done. There was a large range to the show, and because of that, every single type of scene was given good fitting music. It wasn't like the kind of show where there's three themes: the sad theme, the general theme, and the action theme, and you're gonna get one of those three. It wasn't the most technically proficient music. I mean, it wasn't sweeping orchestrals or right. Something, but the range alone was enough to make it better than your run-of-the-mill. Animation-wise, the show is fantastic. The action sequences are great. Two notes that, for a reason this could be, that I see is, one, it was done by Studio Sunrise.
Okay.
Which, of course, Studio Sunrise does a lot of the mech shows, and the Burst Linker character designs are almost like humanoid mech designs in the digital world. So I definitely could kind of see them drawing from their strength in that respect for the action sequences. The other one is one of the two main art directors. The secondary art director doesn't have much, and I'm guessing just with his background, this guy took the lead, is a man named Nobutaka Ike. And he's worked on Tokyo Godfathers, Paprika, Millennium Actress as the art director.
See, I was just about to say, just from what's playing in the chat, what we're showing in the live feed, the art looks really, really good. Like, I like the character designs. I know the little kid. Someone in the chat said that he looks like Cartman from South Park, which is kind of true. But I think it's a nice contrast to her. I think all the backgrounds look really nice.
Yeah.
The animation itself, though, there was an action scene that just came up, and I could see a couple of like cost cutting, like corner cutting measures. Of course, yeah. You're going to get that with a TV budget thing, but I think art wise, it's really standing out to me.
Yeah, it's definitely something that, I mean, you know, it's not a movie, as you said. You know, they're dealing with a TV budget, so there are definitely things that they did to cut costs here or there. But overall, as far as TV budget goes, I definitely was impressed with what they did with the show. It's very pretty, and the animation is very, very well done. And there's a little bit of fan service.
Yes, I just see that.
but the styling is wonderful for the animation. But I do question some of the choices, specifically with regards to Haruyuki's design. So that brings me to like my main review and my personal thoughts on the show. I really, really wanted the show to blow me away. I really started watching the show and was completely sold on it. I've always been a fan of the dot hack kind of virtual world, because I do feel like that's in a way where we're headed with technology, and the characters were engaging and they were interesting. Haruyuki was dynamic and he felt like he had a depth to him that I enjoyed, because he definitely had this, at first he felt like more than just the general pathetic anime character, because he was so bullied and they showed that, and he was so put down consistently that the damage of that was clear. Even if his character design, you know, was a little disjointed feeling, it kind of helped illustrate the fact that he was different from everyone else.
This is interesting. As kind of an aside, this looks like an entry, like at least partially an entry into a kind of a, I would say it might be unique to Japan, a genre called the Dameningen genre, which basically just means worthless or no good human.
Yeah.
So like there's a whole slew of movies and TV shows and books about people, usually men, who aren't good at anything, who are kind of like this guy,
yeah,
and you know how they could succeed if they did something this way.
And there's, yeah. I can see that theme 100% for this. So the show starts off in about a 6-episode kind of like introduction. I mean, it sounds bad to say 6 episodes worth of introduction, and it's not, but it kind of is. Not in a bad way. It's getting to know the world and all of the characters, because this world has a depth and complexity to it that, while still having a number of quirks, that makes it feel so real, which is great, because having that depth really adds a lot. And as a result, you're hungry for more during these first few episodes. And that's what completely sold me. The world felt real. The world was engaging. Every episode, it was like you peeled back another layer of something, a character or the world or the Burst Linkers or Brain Bursts or whatever. And you learn more, and you start to question people's real motives. Like there was one, and I think it might have even been in this episode, or I'm not sure that I'm showing, but one episode you find out that all of the level 9s ended up declaring a truce a while back, because they said that if they declare a truce and they keep the peace, then no one has to go through their brain burst being uninstalled. And no, it's either, you know, no one gets level 10 and then everyone can enjoy it. But then one of the level 9s was overly ambitious, the Black King. and slew the Red King kind of thing. And there's punchy stuff like that, but it's fun. It's fun for what it is, because it's still kind of that game. So you get stuff like that, and it's really interesting. And then, you know, episodes 6 or 7 through 12 are also really good, because they kind of start delivering on all of these things, and you start really getting into the Burstlinger fights, and you start really seeing Hadayuki kind of coming out and growing as a character. And then there's episode 12, and then there's episode 13, and then 14, and 15, and 16, and 17,
and the rest.
And
of it.
The rest of
that
it.
That's what it sounds like, anyway.
Really, around episode 13, the show began to drag. And there's a couple reasons for this. Episodes 13 through 24 take place in the span of 1 week.
Wow.
And so that alone...
What is that compared to the beginning chunk of the show? What does it feel like, anyway?
It feels like the beginning chunk of the show, and I'm sure there might be someone who can be like, well, the beginning chunk of the show took place over 3 days, but it felt like there was more time because
right.
they were doing so much. But the reason why you know it's 1 week is because Kuroyuki Hime goes on a trip to Okinawa, and it's a 1 week trip, and basically it helps remove Hadayuki's crutch in relying on her, and I can see it as a chance to grow, but she's not back until, like, the very end of the series. And so it's kind of that, oh, my God, you know it's 1 week because she's not back. Mm-hmm. And so it's like all of this stuff is happening over 1 week, and that makes it feel even more trivial. Because what they do is they introduce another villain. And basically they have this new villain for this you know, second half of the show that they introduce, and it feels so trivial because, you know, you almost feel like it's going to get resolved. You keep feeling like it's going to get resolved by the time she gets back, and that's 1 week. And so there's that. The pacing was really slow. Characters started making decisions on a habitual basis that I wanted to punch them in the face for. There were problems that, like, seemed like this huge deal in, like, the Brainburst world, and part of me wanted to be like, couldn't you just call the person in real life and tell them not to do, like, you know, there was kind
there's
of like
an easier
that,
way out of this.
Yeah, it's like there's a different course of action. One thing that I will grant, though, was the villain was a perfect villain, because he was that kind of, like, you love to hate him. But it felt like the show lost focus for me. Like, they didn't deliver on earlier promises, like achieving level 10 or meeting the creator or anything like that. And granted, it can be as a result of the fact that the source material is still ongoing and they had to find a way to, like, close it up and, right. and have a climax. But it kind of felt disappointing because there were all of these promises at the beginning. And then it kind of was like, oh, but we're going to go in this direction because the light novel haven't even delivered on those promises
yet. We have
to
wrap this one up and we don't know if we're going to do more. So just deal with it.
Yeah. So it kind of felt that way. And not to harp on the art, and this is when characters started really getting annoying, but I don't like Hadayuki's design. At first, I wasn't sure of it, but the more I watched, him being, like, this chibi character really became a wedge, and it really got deeper. Because I get that he's meant to be that fat, ugly, lower rung of the social society, but I feel like the chibi design, they couldn't commit to it. Because in the chibi design, he's still kind of this cute, likable character. And I think it would have had much more of an impact if he was more designed with the rest of the characters, but was actually an uglier version.
Right, kind of like looked like a lech. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I don't like looking at him.
You know, and it's like, he looks like he's from a different anime. That's what he looks like to me. And I keep expecting him to pop out of chibi form. And it was almost hard to feel like his connections were synthetic because he was so out of place.
He reminds me of Gegege no Kitaro, or maybe kind of like Conan.
I could totally see that. So I mean, like, that's it. And for the record, though, I'm not the only one, because I found a poll online where men in Japan voted him the second most aggravating character
wow.
from recent anime. So. not to mention, like, all of the girls, there's definitely an overtone of a love triangle going on, despite the fact that it's a shonen show. And all of the girls are, like, really super interested in him, and I'm sorry that's not how life works.
No.
I mean, not super interested, but it's obvious. And
maybe
it's
not,
like,
as bad as, like, a harem.
not as bad as, like, a harem, like,
why
definitely.
Do you like this guy?
Yeah, I mean, one of them's a childhood friend, and then I can get Kuroyuki Hime a little bit because, as I said before, he can give her the one thing that she can't get.
Mm.
Because she can get, you know, she could get the hottest guy in school. She could get this or that, but she can't get that level 10, and she thinks his skills are going to be what gets him there. But, like, there's scenes like this that we're seeing, you know, if you're watching the live show, where it's kind of like this, like, romantic scene, and it just feels, like, strange.
Yeah. Like I was saying before, how I liked the contrast between him and the other characters, but I think you're right, in a scene like this, it, the fact that he's so different stands out in a way that's not comfortable.
Yeah.
So.
So in sum, the show could have been great. But it ended up feeling lackluster by the end of it, because all of the great momentum that it built up was gone. It's almost even more disappointing this way, because it's like, you promised me, you were there, and then you had it, and then it slipped through your fingers. That was sad. Part of me wants to ream it because of that, because it's like, how dare you? How dare you play with my heart? But the show did have a lot of strong points, and a few of the strong points carried all the way through. There was character development, which a lot of shows don't give you, and it did have a depth to it. The world was still charming. To try to be fair, I debated between a 3, 3.5, but I'm gonna go on the 3.5 side, just because a lot of the show really was stellar. And, you know, if the first half of the show is awesome and the second half of the show is just mediocre, I think a slightly above average score, you know, sounds fair, even though the show could have been great. So,
well, thank you for that review. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
I liked listening to your voice for 15, 16 minutes.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed that.
But it's my turn now.
Yes.
Well, our turn, actually. This is a joint review. I'm going to take this review.
I will let you lead for a second or two.
Okay.
Because I'm sure people are tired of hearing my voice.
Well, what we watched, and I love doing reviews like this, by the way, because my thing is really, like, film. If you guys didn't get that by now, like, my thing is really, like, film and cinema, so... when we get to review, like, theatrical films, I really enjoy it. And the one we did this week is the new Mamoru Hosoda film, Wolf Children, or the Japanese title is Okami Kodomo no Ame to Yuki. And this was done by Studio Chizu, which is a studio that Hosoda created for the explicit purpose of making this, and they might end up making more stuff in the future, but this is a new studio, also co-produced by Madhouse, which everyone knows. Of course, directed by Mamoru Hosoda, written by Mamoru Hosoda and Satoko Okudera, and with music by Takagi Masakatsu, who is kind of he's a musician that does, like, these kind of independently produced albums, and he makes short films and things like that. But I don't think I think this is his first credit on a film or TV show, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, let's just dive into this. I mean, as soon as the film starts, the first thing that goes through your mind is, God, this is beautiful. Like, this movie is gorgeous. It's so pretty, guys.
So I almost have to say with it, like, the backgrounds are stunning.
Yeah.
But
almost too real.
We definitely had a number of debates where we're like, that has to be footage, filtered footage.
Yeah, there were some scenes. Yeah.
Maybe.
And maybe you'll see some of that stuff. I know that, like, the city shots are very clearly drawn, whether or not they're drawn over photographs. Clearly they are drawn at least from photographs, but yeah. Over photographs, it's hard to say. But there's some moving shots, like, through the forest and stuff like that, where, like, for a second, I thought they were using just real footage with animated characters over it.
You know, and I almost have to say that, like, because the backgrounds are so real, the characters almost, and the characters are beautifully simplistic. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I love the stylistic choices of the characters, but they're almost like too animated. Yeah. Like, everything else is so real.
They stand out in not a terribly good. I mean, it's wonderful. Like, it looks wonderful. The characters look wonderful, and the backgrounds look wonderful together. A little bit weird, but yeah, not too bad. I don't think it's that distracting.
No, it's not glaring.
Enough. Yeah, all of it's pretty enough that it's fine. More than fine. This is a gorgeous film. I think it's really impressive, a very impressive first outing for Studio Chizu. So
yeah,
if they continue to produce things, I think they're going to be a studio to keep your eye on. Because this guy has kind of just showed up and taken the kind of film and anime film industry by storm a little bit, like with Summer Wars a couple years ago, and then the Girl Who Leapt Through Time a couple years before that. I mean, I am very happy with his body of work thus far.
Yeah.
Which should tell you a lot about what I think about this Cran's movie already.
Very picky.
I am really, really picky. The plot-wise, this is going to be a little bit spoilery, but it's nothing that you don't find out in the first 10, 15 minutes of the movie. So if you don't want spoilers, tune out for a couple minutes. Basically, the story follows it starts with a woman named Hana, who is 19 years old. She's a student at a university, and she meets a young man that she starts a relationship with, and then she discovers that he is a werewolf.
Yes.
And they have two children together. And he dies.
They have werewolf horribly. Sex.
Yeah, they have werewolf, and we will get into that. But he dies horribly.
Yeah.
And she is left to raise her the titular children, Ame and Yuki.
That scene is so tough.
Yeah.
Where?
Oh my god.
Because when he dies in wolf form.
Right.
And so
spoilers.
Again, first 10, 15 minutes.
Right.
And you know, that's not what the movie is about. So it's all background, but like they just pick up his body and they put it in, because it's a wolf, and they put it in a trash bag and they put it in a dump truck,
and she sees them do it and just like collapses and falls to like no respect whatsoever. They're just like, it's an animal, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, no, this is my everything, you know?
Yeah.
So she's left with her kids. And that's where the movie really takes off, is once he's out of the picture, it's the story of Hana raising Ame and Yuki. And I think the drama in this film, and we've already kind of hinted at the drama of that particular scene, I think it's really genuine, really touching, heart-wrenching even at times. And I think it's a really great story about, and it really is about raising children as a single mother.
Yes.
The fact that they're werewolves is just happenstance. It just kind of makes that more difficult for her, but I think it's to illustrate that that, you know, how difficult it is to raise a child as a single parent, specifically a single mother. Right now, if you're watching in the live chat, this is the transformation sequence of him turning into a werewolf, which is really kind of subtle and slow and not so an American
like
werewolf in London.
It's not like horror film.
Like it hurts and like bones are cracking and stuff. Nothing like that. Very, very quiet. But yeah, and what you're going to see here in a minute probably is one issue that both of us have with the film. This is one points off, dude. I'm talking to you.
Giant points off.
There is a little bit of furry fan service early on.
Yes.
And this is the moment right here where she's sitting against, this window. She's clearly naked. She's, you know, her clothes are off. And you see the grotesque hand move into the frame. And then his face moves into the frame here in a second. And he is a wolf still. And he leans in for the kiss. And they go down for the wolf sex. Yep.
It's not okay.
That is, okay. And you know what? It feels so out of place in this movie because everything is so well done story-wise.
Yes.
And you really, like, the movie really gives you the impression that this is the first time they've taken this step in their relationship, the first time they're having sex why are they doing it as a wolf? Why?
It's just, it's so awkward.
It's so weird.
You know, like,
it's, this isn't a cultural thing. Let's be real, Japan. Japan, I'm going to be real with you for a second. That's weird.
Okay. All right. I had, you know, that scene was so off-putting for me that for, you know, a good couple minutes after, I just, all I could do was have issue with it. Which is sad because all he had to do was be human form.
That's it.
Like,
it's not that hard.
Like, could have been the exact same scene.
You see the kids bounce in and out of werewolf form, you know, no problem. It's not like, oh, I'm werewolf now. I'm kind of stuck. I'm stuck like this. So if you want the D, it's going to be like this.
He could have leaned in and as he was leaning in, go back to human.
See, that would have been awesome. That would have been perfect. That would have been super awesome, actually. I think Chiaki should have written this movie.
Just that scene.
But yeah, that is a little bit distracting. It feels out of place in a movie that's more or less like really realistic. Like it's got real drama in it about real issues and you know, the struggles of raising children as a single mother. You know, again, that is what this movie is about. And I don't know. It just feels out of place. It feels like it's in the wrong anime.
Yeah.
But back to the things that make this wonderful.
Yes.
I really appreciate the fact that it never allows its premise to hijack the narrative. And, you know, the premise being that this is a woman raising werewolf children, or as someone pointed out in the chat, not really a werewolf, wolf man. I don't really see the difference. But yeah. So, you know, this is about her raising children who happen to be able to turn into werewolves, and as children they kind of do it spontaneously and suddenly when they get upset or emotional or whatever. But it never becomes the movie about the kids who are so hard to control and they turn into werewolves and they kill people, and you know, it you know, becomes a horror movie about this woman who has to deal with a super violent children or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's never about the fact that they're werewolves. Never. Like that just happens to be in the movie, which is really, really interesting. I really appreciate it for not going there.
And I mean, I think in many ways there are moments where, you know, let's face it, how many mothers were like, when you were children, you turned into little demons. Mm-hmm. Like I almost feel in many ways it could definitely be kind of a larger metaphor.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it absolutely is. And even something that's not quite as serious as them, you know, transforming and tearing through the village and killing people or whatever. The threat of the children being discovered as wolves is always present, but yeah, it never reduces the movie to that central conflict. It's yeah. The movie is never about, oh, someone's going to find out that they're werewolves or nothing like that.
Yeah.
It's very, very consistent thematically, consistent narratively. And it's, big points for that. Big points for that. I really love the music.
Yes.
I thought it really, really nicely done. Again, this guy, Takagi Masakatsu, makes kind of experimental music, as I understand it, in short films. Really nice outing from him. Very, very subtle. Lots of piano, cello type stuff. Simple,
yeah,
I think, is the key word here. And it really, I think it creates an effective emotional canvas for the story events to be painted upon. Yeah, big points for the music. What else did you like about it? That's kind of like just generally the things I really enjoyed.
I think one of the things that I really, really liked about this movie is how Haru aged. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like at the end of the movie, and I don't mean just chronologically, because of course they chronologically show time passing.
Right.
And they didn't do any like major, like they started drawing wrinkle lines on her face or something like that, but she felt like such an older woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying she was an old woman at the end of the movie, but she felt like a mother.
Yeah,
you know, like
absolutely.
In the beginning of the movie she felt like a college student, and halfway through the movie, you know, she felt like a young woman who didn't know what the hell she was doing. Mm-hmm. And she was trying her best, but she didn't know what her best was going to end up being. And it felt very real.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't...
Design-wise, she doesn't change that much.
No.
And that's what's interesting, is that they are able to convey that through her performance and through the story, is that she is a mature mother by the time the film finishes, and she wasn't that at the beginning. She is a very, very dynamic character.
Yeah.
And that's, again, big points.
And I can't help... Like it makes... Someone from my perspective, and of course, like, kids for me personally are a long way off. There's a lot of other things in my life I got to get sorted out before that. But I think, you know, I have friends who have started having kids and whatnot. And I think about them and like, how did they know they were ready for kids? And they weren't. Like, and I don't mean that as an insult to my friends. I mean it as no one knows what the hell they are doing
right.
when they have their first child. Like it doesn't matter the support system you have or have or don't have. No one knows. Like, it's like one of those things where when your kid gets sick for the first time
right.
or your kid eats something and you're like, well, do I do nothing? Do I give them medicine, or do I need to be going
right.
to the hospital?
Oh, this is the if you're watching in the live chat, this is the scene where where they find the husband. And he's in wolf form, and he is dead.
I don't think they ever married, did they?
Oh, yeah, whatever they are, the man in the couple.
I that was one of the things I found interesting. Also,
yeah.
is that they never emphasized if they did marry.
Yeah, it just wasn't important. They were just together. That's
yeah.
what it was.
But
it's really interesting.
So that was one of the things is Haru's evolution through the movie. And I really enjoyed watching that, because it felt like life, in the sense that as it was happening, it didn't seem significant, but when you look mm-hmm. back, you're like, oh, we yeah. actually went really far.
Going back to what you said about, like, not knowing what to do and you know, kids getting sick and that kind of thing, there is kind of a really great scene that, a little bit of a criticism, it becomes kind of contrived, but I think it's a good illustration of your point from before, is that I think it's Yuki. Yeah, Yuki
yeah.
eats something they're not supposed to. I think she calls it a dissectant or something like that.
It's silica gel. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah,
being.
That's right.
Yeah.
Silica gel. So Yuki eats silica gel and throws up and gets really sick, and she runs down the street to take, you know, and when she finds Yuki, she's in wolf form, you know, as a child, and she's unconscious. She picks her up, wraps her in a blanket, runs down the street to the hospital. And the contrived part is that the hospital and the vet is across the street from one another. And she's there like, which one do I take my child to? Do I take them to the hospital, or do I take them to the vet? And I think that really kind of illustrates the, you know, conundrum that a parent can get in when your child is sick, you're not exactly sure how to handle the situation, you've got options and you don't know what is best for your child. You know, I think it's a good illustration of that, if a little contrived.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think yeah, this overall, this is a really, really effective piece of film. I think it's actually really special.
Yeah.
I do have some criticisms.
Of course you do, Cram.
Of course I do. The furry fan service aside, I think the voice actors for 10-year-old and 13-year-old Ame and Yuki, respectively,
yes.
are cast way too old.
Yeah.
Way, way, way too old.
They sound closer to, like, 18.
They sound like adults, like straight-up
yeah.
adults. And Ame, the boy, is supposed to be in, like, fifth grade or something?
Yeah.
Elementary school fifth grade?
Supposed to be, I think... At the end of the movie, he's 10, because
yeah,
there's a line
10.
Where you're 10, you're not even an adult yet.
Right. You're an adult wolf, but you're not an adult man, right? So
yeah.
That kind of thing. But yeah, I think they're cast really old, and it's really distracting, like really super distracting, I think. I think that, so one thing that my biggest problem with the movie, aside from the furry stuff, is that Yuki, the character of Yuki, narrates basically the whole movie. So an older Yuki is looking back on the events of this movie and narrating everything. And I think that the narration is wholly unnecessary and needlessly expository. You don't need it. Like, every single time her voice pops up to give you some backstory about what a werewolf is in this universe or whatever. It's, you don't need it. It's not that kind of movie. We don't care what a werewolf is in this universe because the movie's not about werewolves. I mean, that's clear in the narrative. So I think that everything that she ends up saying in the narration is useless and distracting and becomes lazy feeling.
I have to say, for me, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but I am saying from the perspective of someone who isn't as much of a cinema buff, mm-hmm. I guess I could say as you are, it wasn't as offensive to me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as glaring. It wasn't as annoying or whatnot as I think maybe for me as you found it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I could definitely agree there were a few instances of show us, don't tell us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think that a movie that like this that has unnecessary narration, so many times if you imagine these scenes without the narration, if you imagine these moments or just like there's even moments in the film where the narration is just set over a starry sky so that she talks for a minute about something and then it cuts to the next scene, which is to me is just like, what?
Yeah.
I think that you find that if you just simply remove the narration from those moments or just do a little editing, you end up with a quieter, more subtle film. And I think that that's what this movie was really wanted to be. It is that kind of movie. Like, it feels like that kind of movie.
Yeah.
And you just take it the next step by just not having any of that unnecessary stuff in it. You know, cut the fat a little bit, right? So... but yeah, I think overall it's really good. That's basically all I have on this without getting into, you know, spoilers and super specific plot points. I think that thematically this movie is absolutely 100% about raising children as a single mother, and it does an excellent job of showing her and how she doesn't have to rely on anyone. There's a point in the movie where she realizes it's best to move out to the country with her kids, and they kind of rough it a little bit, clean up this old house and kind of figure it out that way. But the feeling that you get by the end of the movie is that she's done this on her own. Even with some of the help that she gets from neighbors and whatnot, she's done this on her own. And that's, I think that's really important. I feel like the title might be a little bit of a misnomer because as much as it's about the children, Ame and Yuki, I think it's really about Hana. Like, really, really about the mother.
Yeah.
With all of my few criticisms, I think overall I would have to give this 4 wolf sex scenes out of 5.
That is funny.
What about you? What's your score?
My personal score is I would give it 4.5 obscene wolf sex scenes out of 5. But, you know, and I feel like the difference between our scores probably comes from, like I said, as a personal, my personal movie experience and whatnot, I don't find those type of things as offensive, right, or whatever you want to call it, as you do. So, I mean, I guess in traditional AAA history, we will take the average and round up.
Okay.
Chucky wins!
I can concede a 4.5. It's a really great film. It really is.
Though in fairness, Mitsugi also said 4.5 at the end of watching it.
Wow, well, so that's good. Well, I guess that's it. We did it.
We did it.
That brings us to the end of another podcast. Be sure to find us online at www.aaapodcast.com, iTunes, where you can and should leave us a rating and a review. We'd really appreciate it. And our Twitter photo feed, we can't mention that enough, guys. Get on Twitter. We've got some really good stuff going on there.
Yes.
We can find that at twitter.com/aaapodcast, which was actually very, very active this weekend, if you did not know, with all of our live coverage of the anime fair.
I don't think they knew that yet.
No, they didn't. We haven't said it at all. of course, you can catch our live broadcast every Sunday night at 8 o'clock p.m. EST right here on Ustream. A great big thanks to everyone who joined us in the live chat. Our closing song today will be Fixed Star by the artist Mami Kawada from the anime Toaru Majutsu no Index. Catch you all next week.
Have a great one, everyone.
Bye-bye.
I'm a star. I threw the calls in my guitar.